All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And a happy Father's Day to everybody from all of us here at Veterans Radio. It's a beautiful day in Michigan, and we're grateful to have you here. In fact, we're going to be talking about a father and on our program, and probably a number of fathers. If you have a comment that you'd like to make about your dad on Father's Day, give us a call here at Veterans Radio. The local number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. And, you know, we just want to hear what did your dad do in the war? And I think the flyer I sent out this week said something to that effect. What did you do in the war, Dad? And it's rather fascinating. I was looking at some information. Our guest today on our program, Del Stecker's book, Sailor Man, is about a young father who joins up in the Navy, actually at 16 years old, probably even younger than that. He's kind of snuck in, and the trauma that he went through in the Pacific during World War II and trying to adjust on his way back home. But he wrote some amazing letters to his son. So I want you to make sure that you stick around for that interview, because I think you're going to find it really fascinating. And speaking of other amazing things from World War II, we have a real gem here in the Ann Arbor-Ypsilanti area. It's called the Yankee Air Museum. And they've got their Thunder Over Michigan program coming up at the end of August. And joining me on the line right now is one of the hosts of that program, and that's Kevin Walsh. Kevin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, good morning, Dale. How are you?
I am terrific, and I am anxious to talk to you about what's going on at the Yankee Air Museum.
Well, of course, as you mentioned, the big event coming up August 29th and 30th is the Thunder Over Michigan Air Show. I can't even believe it's been 17 years that we've been doing this, but coming back from a four-year hiatus, obviously the headline for this year, everybody's favorite, the United States Navy Blue Angels, are going to be here, and it's exciting to have them back in Southeast Michigan again.
That is really exciting. I got to see them. I can't remember when it was the last time they were there, when they arrived the day before, and they kind of did their little practicing routine, and they all came in and landed, and all the pilots got out, and, you know, all these young guys, and then this young woman got out also, took off her helmet, you know, kind of shook her head, and I went, well, the world is changing, that's for sure. It certainly looks like for the better. And so I'm anxious to see them again. There was another event this week for the Yankee Air Museum. Could you tell us about the hangar?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, everybody knows about the Willow Run Save the Bomber Plant project that we've had going on almost a year and a half now, and we were successful in saving 144,000 square feet of the former Willow Run Bomber Plant, where over 8,000 B-24s were produced in World War II. June 16th marked the original date that the bomber plant was dedicated 74 years ago. Well, we did a rededication on June 16th this past week to commemorate that point, and also move historical markers from the former site to our current site. It was a very special event. A lot of VIPs and supporters and donors and media in attendance. It was fantastic, and it's nice to start setting some roots into what's going to be the future home of the Yankee Air Museum.
Just for the two or three listeners of ours that don't know about the Yankee Air Museum, could you give us a little bit of a background on what it is and what your mission is?
Absolutely. Well, the Yankee Air Museum started well over 30 years ago, back in 1981, and was a regional aviation museum started by a bunch of enthusiasts, like most museums were started. We grew as an enthusiast aviation museum over the years until 2004. 2004, everything changed for us as we had a devastating fire, destroyed the entire hangar, destroyed 8 airplanes, 35,000 artifacts, and every piece of equipment, from office equipment to machinery to equipment to keep the airplanes running. Everything was lost, and we had to rebuild. So over the course of the last 10-plus years, we have moved three times the organization to different locations for us to operate. We are now in a permanent location, but too small to be the future museum, but it's a destination point for people to come to, and an operation point where we can collect artifacts and make sure that veteran stories and the artifacts and memorabilia of veteran stories are preserved and conserved, and then also told through educational programming and our tour programming at the museum.
Well, I know I've been out there numerous times, and it's always a great adventure for me as a former helicopter pilot. There's a real helicopter inside in addition to the one outside, and you can see everything in there. They've got a simulator that you can climb into and pretend that you're a pilot of all kinds of different types of aircraft. And just, it's so exciting for anybody who's ever been involved with that. And I think it's such a great opportunity, especially for those of us in southeastern Michigan, to come out and support the Yankee Air Museum. And, you've got another great deal out there where you can book a flight on one of these older airplanes. Can you tell our audience about that?
Yeah, the differentiation between our museum and most aviation museums is we actually fly a number of our airplanes. A lot of times you go to an aviation museum and they sit static and they don't fly their airplanes. We do. We fly one of the most world-renowned B-17s. There's only about five of these B-17s in the world that even offer rides, none of them in this region of the United States. So our B-17 Flying Fortress, the heavy four-engine bombardment aircraft from World War II, the medium bombardment aircraft, B-25. We fly a combat veteran B-25 in which folks can take rides in both those bombers. And now just getting going, just ramping up the program, our C-47 Transport, again, a World War II-era transport aircraft, people are going to be able to take a ride on that too. And then going all the way back to the days of barnstorming, we've just acquired a three-place, so it's two passengers, one pilot, open cockpit biplane, a Waco biplane, that people are going to be able to experience the an open cockpit flight in a biplane, taking them all the way back to the days of barnstorming.
That's great. That's really exciting. Because where I live in Ann Arbor, evidently we're in the flight pattern of the B-17. I don't know how these people on the ground, when these things started flying over 100 of them at a time, the whole world must have started shaking as they approached their bombing, you know, areas where they're going to, you know, make their runs. But boy, those things are loud and they get your attention. And I can only imagine the psychological fear that they must have put in people as they were coming over.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely a different time, and mass production and mass formations, mass missions, that was all part of kind of breaking the spine of the enemy during World War II. And Detroit was kind of the leader of the manufacturing and the capabilities back home here. Many people, of course, recognize what we did and built bombers at Willow Run, but a lot of the manufacturing processes that were really inherent to the big three to begin with were used all over the country to manufacture everything that was needed for war, and everybody got behind it. But again, it was kind of the automotive know-how and the automotive manufacturing that gave the United States the edge. And we were going to outproduce airplanes, we were going to out-train troops, we were going to outproduce ammunition faster than any enemy could ever do. And that's why it's so important to remember what we did here on the home front. It's not just the front lines, but on the home front here, if we weren't working 12-hour shifts 7 days a week in the manufacturing plants in the United States, we wouldn't have won the war. There's no possible way. So, and that's a story that we tell at the Yankee Air Museum, and it's something that we don't forget about is, obviously, we talk about the veterans that have fought our wars, defended the freedoms we enjoy today, but we don't forget the home front story, and even today, the continuing home front story that still is apparent through Michigan.
Absolutely, Kevin. So two things I want you to tell our audience. Number one is that the air show is coming up at the end of August, and I think it ends today, at least according to the email I got this morning. If you want to get some tickets for this, how do they go about doing that?
Well, it's really easy. You just go online to yankeeairmuseum.org and click on the Thunder Over Michigan icon, and that will take you right to the website and the purchase page to get your tickets. Now, remember, don't buy tickets for kids 15 and under. Kids 15 and under are completely free, so they don't need a ticket at all, only the adults 16 and up. Right now, until midnight tonight, you can get your tickets for $30 each for adult, and then parking you can get at a discounted rate also until this evening, and then the prices go up, and then they go up again before the actual event date. So you're able to buy in discount, but not as cheap as you can get them before midnight tonight. So we encourage everybody to get on there, buy the tickets. It is one of the cheapest ticket in town to such fabulous entertainment. It's entertainment that you can't get anywhere else. You know, we are the major air show in Michigan. This is the only appearance of the Blue Angels in Michigan. So this is the time to buy your tickets. And if you haven't got something for Dad yet, you can go online, get those tickets right
Here's
now, put them up
Here's
at home,
and
you get your Father's Day gift. You look like a hero.
All right, Kevin. Well, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. I guarantee that we're going to be out there at the end of August. And the website, again, is YankeeAirMuseum.org. All their information is there. You can take a book a flight on one of the airplanes that he was talking about, buy your tickets for Thunder Over Michigan. Even if you don't want to do that, just go out to the museum and go through it. It's amazing, folks. I think you'll be blown away by the exhibits that they have out there. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
All righty. Again, I encourage everybody, go to YankeeAirMuseum.org. We'll put a link up on our site also. And if you buy your tickets, we'll see you out there at the end of August, August 29th and 30th, Willow Run at the Yankee Air Museum. And in just a moment, we'll be right back. We're going to be talking about a father on Father's Day, how appropriate, with Del Stacker and his book, Sailor Man, about J.P. Nunley. We'll be right back after these messages.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And that is Remember Pearl Harbor, and I have a feeling that that might be a motivational song that was produced right at the beginning of World War II, and I think that the protagonist, I guess you could say, in our book today probably heard that song and joined up. I know there's the thing about the Navy poster that we're going to talk about in just a minute. But joining us right now on Veterans Radio is Del Stacker, a good friend of Veterans Radio, member of the Military Writers Society, prolific writer and award-winning author in his own right. The paperback version of Sailor Man has come out. It's The Troubled Life and Times of J.P. Nunley, United States Navy. Del, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, Dale. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't tell you how much I could say I enjoyed your book. It's a disturbing book, but I did enjoy reading it, only because I guess without giving the whole thing away is that, you know, JP had a tough time, and he did the best he could.
Yeah, it's a compelling story, and it's one that I tell people it's one of great redemption. And I just want to, today, it is Father's Day, and my heart goes out to every father that was in combat and had PTSD and may not have been the best father because of it, but JP's story is important, and I'm just so pleased that I was able to write it and then share it with folks like you.
Well, it starts off, and it was interesting because in the book you talk about JP Nunley prior to his joining the service. And I guess this kind of hit home because my dad was from Tennessee. And when I've talked to friends and relatives, there's the before war dad and the after war dad. And not that my dad was, you know, had any of the major issues that JP had, but evidently he was just much more relaxed, obviously, prior to going, into the Coast Guard. And he was in some of the places that JP was in. And in fact, I wanted to just read a little bit from the very first chapter, and I don't want to steal this, but it just says, this is from his sister, and it says that I loved him more than I loved my mother and father, she said with a heartfelt sigh that bridges time. But of course, everybody loved JP. And I thought that was a great way to start the story. And there's a picture of I don't know, how old is he when he joined the Navy?
He was 16, and he illegally enlisted in the Navy in 1943, and he was just a boy. And that's the real sadness of this story, because the more I got into it and got to know his family, particularly his sister, who idolized him, he was almost like from Hollywood, the boy that you'd see in movies that everybody loved and everybody respected and wanted to be like, and the war changed him.
Quite dramatically. You mentioned in the beginning of the book of how he was taken by the Navy poster to join the Navy.
Yeah, that was really an interesting thing when I was interviewing his sister, and she mentioned this, and I started doing research, and I had that actual poster and pamphlet in front of me, and I described it to her, and she said, "I think that's the one," and so that's part of the magic of finding these stories and talking to the people that are connected. We really felt like that was one of the main influences, and I shared that in the book, that in the height of patriotism after Pearl Harbor, he gave up his life, quit school, lied to become a sailor, and then ended up serving on the USS Fuller, and he participated in 7 invasions in the South Pacific.
I found that amazing, and I'm looking at the book here in the poster, and it says, "Men make the Navy," and it says, then the next line is, "The Navy makes men. Fighting action, expert training, 49 skilled jobs, good pay, quick promotion, good food and quarters, good shipmates for men 17 to 50.
Yeah, and then he shares later in his letters to his son what really he experienced. It was a 180-degree difference between what the poster was and what war really is.
Well, I think a lot of us probably had that experience, what we thought it was going to be like and what it turned out to be like.
Yeah.
Was not quite as romantic as we had envisioned at the time. So let's go back and let's talk a little bit about JP. He's 16 years old, 17 years old. He lies his way into the Navy at the time, and I don't know how you had the courage to do that. Don't you have to at least have your parents sign off on a form back in the 40s?
Well, there's a group today called the VUMS, the V-U-M-S. It's the Veterans of Underage Military Service.
Oh.
And some of these fellas, they were 14, 15, 16 years old. Some of them are still alive. And the youngest one, actually, that was documented was a 12-year-old that was in the Navy and participated in the Battle at Guadalcanal. They lied. And back at that time, a lot of it was wink-wink, I saw accounts where boys were sent home with basically a note. Here, have your father sign this, and they'd go home, and they were forged. Or the recruiters just lied about it and just took the boys and didn't care. It's estimated that maybe 250,000 to 300,000 actually enlisted illegally. Maybe 50 to 60,000 never were caught.
Wow.
Yeah.
Trying to think of what you're like when you're 17 versus, the 21, 22-year-old. There's a real big difference there emotionally and physically when you're going into service and especially the things that he found himself involved in.
That's one of the indicators I learned in studying PTSD. Of course, I'm not an expert on it, but I do know a fair amount. And the age and education level of the person experiencing it is important. And what's interesting is this book came out of my first book about the Lady Gangster, the actual ship, the Fuller. And my father was a member of that crew along with JP at the same time. And my father was 8 years older, educated, very well read.
Mm-hmm.
And his experience, when I look back at this, my father was a very different person after the war compared to JP. And a couple months ago, I had the opportunity to spend time with Harold Nunnally, JP's mm-hmm. son, who is, I thank him so much for bringing me the story and sharing these letters. And, we now are friends, and we can share and talk about this, that, my father as an older veteran fared better. Of course, mm-hmm. he had difficulties from the war, as all veterans do, because of the experience. But, the young veterans, particularly, when they experience concussion and artillery and the combat, they react differently. And so my heart goes out to anyone who's experienced that kind of experience.
Well, you know, we're talking with Del Stacker here, the author of Sailor Man. It's the story of J.P. Nunley of the United States Navy, who enlisted at 17 years old and found himself pretty much every major combat situation you could find himself in the Pacific. If you've got a question or a comment about your dad and during the service, give us a call here on Veterans Radio at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. Well, let's start him off. You mentioned that he was on the USS Fuller. Can you talk about this ship? It kind of had an interesting history.
Yeah, it was basically one of the very first attack transports, and it a very storied ship. It actually served in the North Atlantic and prior to the war. It was involved in some cutting edge things in the North Atlantic, and you know, dodging U-boats and bringing troops in and out and refugees from Europe. And then immediately when the war in the Pacific started, it was transferred there. And from Guadalcanal on up, it delivered troops to 9 invasions in the South Pacific. It's the only attack transport that received 9 battle stars. It actually was eligible for 11 because on 2 islands it invaded each island twice. And it was actually, when you go to the famous Higgins boats that delivered mm-hmm. the troops to the beach, it had the very first Higgins boats in the Navy. My father was one of the first crewmen back on that ship, and that's why I knew so much about it. And Harold read my book, the first one, and said to me, "I have these letters about my father. Would you read them?" I was hesitant at first. You know, it's things with authors and ownership and those
right.
kind of things. But he persisted, and we worked it out. And over a 3-year period, I was immersed in this story, and I'm so glad to have been involved in it. It was from my heart. You know, I can say this, even if I hadn't written this book, I would say this is a very, very important book about war and service and what it costs to be a veteran and also the long-term costs to multi-generations that go after mm-hmm. the actual cost for the individual. And I would say to anyone who's interested in veterans, World War II, PTSD, please read the book, share it, let people know about it, because it's not only is a very moving book, but it also is a book about redemption, because I won't be a spoiler, but I think the end of the book is probably the best part.
We won't go to that part either, but
yeah.
You have to read the book, folks. But I do want to talk about some of the things that JP was involved in
yeah.
you know, while he was going across the South Pacific. Again, this was very timely to me, because my dad, as I mentioned, was in the Coast Guard on an LST. That what landed at Iwo Jima and at Okinawa and probably other places. And now you've got my interest peaked, so I'm going to go back and see if I can find his unit's history and see where else they've been. You know, these boats, ships, excuse me, I'm not a Navy guy, but are, you know, just, they're crowded.
Yeah, they're 36 feet long and they're crowded with people. And then later they're crowded with ammunition and supplies and then the wounded going back and forth. And I think just one of the things that JP described was this 3-day period when he was on Saipan, or I think it's Saipan, the island, mm-hmm. That he worked himself into such a frenzy, and he did not even know if he was alive or dead. He started hallucinating. He'd been worked so hard in this frenzy of taking troops in and bringing them back and forth with supplies and being barraged by artillery and mortars from the Japanese on the beach, and he literally was in a fog and did not know that he was alive or dead, and he was hallucinating. And that was 3 days later that he kind of came out of it. So he did that 7 times. And the first invasion he was involved in was Bougainville in the Solomons, and then later Saipan, Tinian, Peleliu, twice in the Philippines, and then also Okinawa. So right at the edge of the battlefield, these young men were meshed in combat, you know, multiple times. Maybe not as harrowing as on the beach with the Marines every time, but certainly a dose of combat over and over and over. So,
the way he describes the, you know, he was I'm not in the Navy. It's a coxswain?
A coxswain.
Coxswain. And he was on, was he on the Higgins boat, or is he
He's on a Higgins boat, the 36-foot Higgins boat.
Okay. The Higgins boat is made out of wood.
Yeah, plywood.
Plywood with a flat bottom and all these other things.
Yeah.
And so he would, you know, pilot this wooden boat that, like the ones you would build as a kid, onto the beaches, dropped the front flap, and the Marines would go running off into battle, and then he would back off and hopefully get back to his ship safely, right?
Yeah, and make multiple trips back and forth. There was one or two occasions where he got on shore, and there's one harrowing experience he goes through when he just out of curiosity he was on Okinawa, wanted to see what was going on, and he almost I want to ruin the story there. He goes into a very frightful situation, and then on the way back gets caught in a artillery barrage on the beach just trying to get back to his boat. But what he went through was tremendous, and he was 16 years old when he started. And by the end of the war, he's not even 20 years old when he goes home. So imagine when you look around today and you see teenagers who are, in high school.
I know. I look around my classroom. I teach at a local community college, and I look around. After I read this book, I was looking at my students in there, and I just kind of wondered. I said, phew, how many of you guys could do this?
Yeah, and do it 7 times.
Yeah.
And, amazing.
And it is. And, we're going to come back in just a moment, but we're talking with Del Stacker, author of Sailor Man, and about the story of J.P. Nunley. And when we get back, I want to talk about, your hookup with his son and how these letters came about. We've got about a minute, according to my assistant in there, flashing me with numbers. Tell me a little bit about Harold and how he got involved with you, and you mentioned it earlier on.
Harold read the book, The Lady Gangster, which is about the USS Fuller, and he contacted me and just said, I have these letters. My dad was on the ship, and you might want to read them. And
we got a couple of seconds.
Okay, and he shared the letters with me. And these were written when his dad was in his 60s.
Oh, okay.
And it was in answering the question, Dad, what the heck happened to your life? Why did it fall apart?
Okay. We're going to go back and find out how his life fell apart and what he tried to do to pull it back together. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after the news.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Hospital apprentice Fred McGuire, after emptying his rifle, used it as a club. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
While attached to the USS Pampang, McGuire was one of the shore parties moving in to capture Mundang, Philippine Islands, on the morning of 24 September 1911. Ordered to take station within 100 yards of a group of huts close to the trail, McGuire advanced and stood guard as the leader and his scout party first searched the surrounding deep grasses, then moved into the open area before the huts. Instantly, the enemy opened point-blank fire on the exposed men, and approximately 20 enemy charged the small group from inside the huts and from other concealed positions. McGuire, responding to the calls for help, was one of the first on the scene. After emptying his rifle into the attackers, he closed in with his rifle, using it as a club to wage fierce battle until his comrades arrived on the field, when he rallied to the aid of his dying leader and other wounded. Although himself wounded, McGuire ministered tirelessly and efficiently to those who had been struck down, thereby saving the lives of two who otherwise might have succumbed to enemy-inflicted wounds. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Safe and hard-working, over-the-road truck drivers deserve modern and well-maintained equipment they can count on. Conway Truckload has purchased over 500 new Kenworth T680s with twin-screw drive axles, automated manual transmissions, and other features that improve handling and comfort. Take a virtual tour of the equipment at truetoblue.com/equipment. Speak to a recruiter and apply to drive for Conway Truckload by calling 866-WORK-FOR-US. That's 866-WORK, W-O-R-K, the number 4, U-S. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and today is a Navy Day, so we encourage all you Navy veterans to give us a call here and talk about your dad, if he was in the Navy, at 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. We are talking with Del Stacker, author of Sailor Man, the story, The Troubled Lives and Times of J.P. Nunley, United States Navy, who snuck into the Navy at 17 years old, right after Pearl Harbor, and the next 4 years turned out to be an adventure that he never really got over. Would you say, Del?
Yeah, and when he came home, I think the story is that's where the story really gets the most interesting. That, as shared by his son Harold,
mm-hmm.
JP, you know, had the difficulties of alcoholism and the PTSD, the downspinning of his life, and he kind of became what people would say is the failure, you know, the person to be embarrassed over, and mm-hmm. never could really hold a job and could never keep it together. And I think what's so important and interesting about this story is that you mentioned that, you know, the young JP in the beginning. I think he never went away. He was always there somewhere. And when he was in his 60s, his son Harold said, "Please, Dad, tell me what happened." And he sat down and wrote these letters, and they were just very truthful. Just enlightening, and he shared the story of what really happened to him, and I think it opens a window for everybody to understand, you know, the cost of war, combat, and how this one man handled it. And it's a beautiful story because the ending, I think there's redemption in it,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's like I say, from my perspective, if I hadn't written it, I wish I had. You know, it's just a beautiful story.
It is an amazing story, and I think that there are many people that have served in the military that can relate to so many of the different things that JP writes about to his son. Not just the combat, but he also talks about going on shore leave in the Philippines and finding out where, you know, I mean, again, he's 17 years old. And think about all you men that are living, you know, listening in out there. What were you like when you were 17, 18, 19 years old? If you had the opportunity to go and get a drink, maybe you would take it, maybe you wouldn't, but most of them did.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I think they've been exposed to these types of things. It wasn't like JP was from a big suburban area or a big urban area and he's already been exposed to these things. So this is another part of the adventure of what was going on.
Yeah, I think he was overwhelmed in many ways, and it's a way that, you know, alcohol at that time and other substances too are used as a way to self-medicate, to get mm-hmm. through the trauma of it all. And his letters are so revealing and understanding about this whole process. I think also what came out of this is really interesting is the comments I've received from other people. I attended the Citadel and served in the military, and during the time I was there, I knew my classmates very well, but several of my classmates have read this book and have gotten in touch with me, and they said, "Thank you for writing this book. It tells me more about my own father," because
mm-hmm.
they were also sons of veterans of World War II. And then they revealed, they said, "Well, you know, my father went through something like this, and this explains his behavior." And these are two fellows who were roommates of mine have shared that, and I just, you know, for anyone who's been a child of someone who's gone through this, there's great enlightenment here. And you know Joyce Faulkner, who's
right,
also been
absolutely.
On the show. And she's gone through this with writing a wonderful book about her father's experience in Iwo Jima.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing Joyce personally, she personally went through the trauma of having a father who had substance problems after the war and his behavior. And this was an illuminating experience for her to read the book. And so that's why I said there's this whole thing about redemption. There was redemption for JP and his relationship with Harold, and for all veterans, and for all of us also, I think, to understand what we put people through, that when we ask young men to protect us and to be in the military, that there's a big cost for our asking for the people who do this for us. You know, now it's men and women. So
absolutely, and that's something that we've been, you know, we've been talking about on Veterans Radio quite a bit. In fact, you mentioned Joyce's story. I went to a couple of your conferences, and one of them, Joyce and I sat down with a number of other people, and we were just talking about, you know, World War II, and our dads had all been in World War II. And the next thing it came down to is that all of our dads had in some way been involved on Iwo Jima. And we started talking to each other about behavior of our dads after they came back. And the similarities were amazing to all of us. And it's almost like we decided to, you know, start up the sons and daughters of Iwo Jima to just talk about these issues. And I don't know if this ever came to fruition, but I know that somebody else in the military writers was going to put together just the sons and daughters of veterans to have a place where they could go and find out that they're not alone. And it's not that all of our fathers came back, you know, with the same issues that JP had or some of the other issues that you mentioned, but they all had changed somewhat. And nobody could really explain it. And most of our fathers were, you know, pretty stoic, and they weren't sharing their emotions with us at the time. And again, this is a great opportunity for those of you out there whose father was in World War II, maybe one of these letters might, you know, explain something that you've been searching for the last 70 years.
Yeah, I just can't express how much, just the experience for myself. And when I was inside JP's head for 2 or 3 years reading these letters, and, you know, in a large way, you know, this book is his book as much as it's mine, because I'm just at a certain point I became the editor of his letters. And I had to know him as well as I possibly could. And there's a tremendous understanding from my part, and I hope others would later also agree, that what we asked young men, and now young women also, to do, to be in the military, to help protect us, and to be that defender of our freedoms, there is a cost. And we need to be aware of that. And so I really encourage people to read the book and share it.
So do I, but we're not done talking about it, because I'm looking back here at toward the beginning, and in fact, some of his letters are follow-up letters to previous letters, and he apologizes for some of the things that he wrote, and it sounds like some of the things he might have wrote, he might have been, you know, had a couple of beverages before he wrote them, and then he would, you know, think about it the next day or so and write a follow-up and say, oh, you know, I apologize for this. But he just wanted, I just love the idea of how much he wanted his son to understand what had happened to him.
Yeah, I think that's...
It wasn't whining. He wasn't whining. He said, well, you know, it's, you know, the way the world is and blah, blah, blah. It was that he was trying to make sense of his own life.
Yeah, very true. And I think that one of the things that I loved about these letters is there was no sense of whining. There was no poor me. There was no shifting of blame. It was one of wanting to understand himself, and I think it was therapeutic for him to write these letters, and share with his son and say, this is what I know. And he was very truthful. The other part is, these are very truthful letters. I think for someone to write a letter and then apologize later for maybe being under the influence a little bit, or there's one particular incident in the letter, I don't want to telegraph it to the readers, but when you read it, it's extremely embarrassing for his behavior.
Oh, mm-hmm.
when he was in the Philippines. And in advance, I remember talking to Harold about it, and I said, you know, I've got to tell that story. And he said, well, we'll do that. And there's this honesty of him sharing, you know, some of the most embarrassing moments, but he was so honest in sharing it. And what rang through with this entire process, and then also getting up to the very end, which, like I say, we won't telegraph what's at the end, but the honesty at the end of the book is so beautiful. And I think in some way, if there's anything I can say about this book, it's JP's book.
Mm-hmm.
It's his explanation of who he is and what he was. And it's in a way, it's an apology for what happened, but also it's a yearning for forgiveness. And how this all works is that there is forgiveness. There is a closure to all of this. And it's in reading the book and in understanding his life.
Well, he mentions in throughout the book about how the Navy, and I think these might be some editorial comments, but it's just that, you know, that the Navy should have had concerns related to the effect of this constant fear of being torpedoed or the constant lack of sleep. And he talks about, the kamikaze plane starting to come toward his ship. And he said, that, you know, what are they coming after us for? They want to go after the big guys. And, you know, that same type of story. My dad was on an LST that got hit by a kamikaze, and you know, how traumatic that was, to anybody on those ships, because as he was pointing out, there were 500 and some men on his ship, but they would carry 1,000, 2,000 Marines, you know, close to the beaches for those invasions. And in my dad's case, his LST was hit with 500 Marines in the hole, and none of them survived. So you wonder, you know, you now know why.
Yeah.
Certain behaviors are certain things. I mean, because, of course, PTSD was not that it was unknown. It just hadn't been labeled yet, and, you know, they just wanted to get people out, it sounded like.
Yeah. And also, just it's one of these things also, you know, if you don't have it, you don't want to deal with it. And I'll share a side story. There was another veteran later on that had read this book, and he was from, you know, later on in Korea and Vietnam, and his attitude was kind of, well, I don't know about PTSD because I didn't have it, I didn't get it, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's that kind of thing of, well, if I went through things that were tough and I didn't have PTSD, then what are these other people? Are they shirking? And, you know, it goes all the way back to, you know, the original idea of this started in, particularly in World War One. You know, shell shock was what they called it, and in some cases, you know, people were seen as cowards if they had shell shock. And that famous Patton incident that's in the movie, you know, mm-hmm. where the guy is slapped, and you know,
right,
you know, so it's what's overwhelming. I've never went through this myself. I've had traumatic experiences in my life, and they were nowhere near what JP went through, and I still sometimes sit and reflect about how things have affected me. I can't imagine what the men that went through combat went through.
I can't either. I mean, some of these shells that are being, you know, lobbed towards some of these ships are, you know, 2,000-3,000 pounds, or the size of a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I was shot at, and that was the most frightening thing for me, was just getting shot at. But these artillery barrages that you have to, you know, curl yourself up into a ball and hope that you survive. I can't imagine the anxiety that must bring on, and the absolute total fear. I mean, there's no, you can't escape being afraid of that stuff.
Yeah, and in JP's case, as he describes that he's going through one of those, and he's sitting on a ship that's got ammunition and petrol.
Right. You know, yeah, he's sitting
so
on.
That's on top of that, you know, and his fear is he's going to get hit and blown up because one next to him gets hit and blown up. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think we put people through a great deal. And on Father's Day here, this is a day for us to think and thank for our fathers who did serve in combat, and maybe we can understand a little bit more about them.
I think it's interesting, and you know, I don't know if this is appropriate or not. I ran into a World War. I didn't run into him literally, but I was at the gas station, and a World War II veteran was at the next pump. He had, you know, he had his hat on, and I just said, "Oh, where did you serve?" And he says, I said, "Oh, all over Europe." He says, "I was in France, Belgium, Holland, and these other things." And I said, "Oh, well, what did you do?" And he says, "You know, whatever I had to do." And he goes back to pay for the gas, comes back out, and he says, "But I will tell you a story." He says, "I was pulled over the other day for going too fast." Now, this guy's got to be over 90. And he says the cop comes up and sees he had this World War II hat, and he had a little sticker on the back of his car, and he said, "I'm going to let you go this time, sir, but please be careful, and thank you for your service." And I encourage everyone, if you see one of these older gentlemen and some of the older women out there wearing their World War II hats, because there aren't that many around, just thank them. Because if they hadn't gone in both directions, east and west, who knows what we would be doing right now, or what language we would be speaking right now. And I think it's rather interesting if we don't acknowledge what these men and women did.
Yeah, they served with a lot of dignity, and in JP's case, for all the things he went through and how it affected his life, one of the things in his great honesty of his letters, he didn't complain, he didn't whine, he told the truth in the end, and it's just, like I said, I was just so pleased to be able to be part of this story and share it, and you know, I just hope as many people that they can will read it and understand the great service that these men did for us.
Well, we've got about 7 minutes or so to go, so let's tell them where they can buy the book. Where can I get Sailor Man, Dell?
Well, Amazon is probably the easiest. You know, they're the 800-pound gorilla in the book world.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon has it. It's Sailor Man. Just, you know, go to Books and Sailor Man. It's there. It's in paperback, and it's also in the electronic version.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble has it also as electronic, and I think it, some stores may have it. And then also, if you want multiple books, which I encourage to buy and share the book, Hellgate Press, the publisher, at hellgatepress.com. Get in touch with Harley at Hellgate Press, and they've got deals on multiple copies. I do know that there's places that it's for sale. We're trying to get it into military museums. The USS Missouri at Pearl Harbor bought 50 copies for their gift shop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we're trying to get into places like that. I'm speaking in a lot of World War II clubs and places like that. But it's available on ordering online through Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Books A Million,
mm-hmm.
and then also directly from Hellgate Press itself.
I'm just thinking here, this is a book that should be in all the VA libraries.
We've sent copies to the Chief of Naval Operations. They have a reading list. There's other groups we've gone to and others. My hope is that that somebody would grab onto it and push it for. It'd be a great movie. Anything. This is a great story.
It is a great story. I'm thinking of like the Naval Press. What is that? Naval Institute or whatever. Lots of comments from them. So what's up next for Dale Stacker? What are you working on now?
I also write fiction, and I have with a publisher that's being looked at another crime fiction thriller book, and then I'm working on another one, and then I have two memoir type ideas books that I'm thinking about. They're similar to The Lady Gangster and Sailor Man.
Mm-hmm.
One would maybe related to police work, and another one would be military, but it would be Vietnam. So I'm working on other projects, but the thing I've done this year is I've stopped all work on everything, and all I'm working on is the promotion and sharing about Sailor Man. I really feel that this was a gift to me as a writer from Harold, JP's son. And this is another way for me to thank all veterans and also to serve my country and my society is to share this story about the cost of war.
Mm-hmm.
It's always authors want to tout their book, and I understand that. But this is one where I want to get outside of it and be a different kind of person and say, if I hadn't wrote this book, I'd be touting it because it has the potential to share a story about what it means to serve and the price paid by someone, and then also the wonderful story of redemption. Like I said, I don't want to telegraph the end, but this is a book, even though I read it, every time I read it, when I get to the end, I cry. So
I have to agree. There were a few tears in my eyes, too, when I finished it. And I think it is an important book, Dale, and the idea you're not only you're getting the story out, but you're also making people aware of these things. And then on this Father's Day, there are many families out there that unfortunately are torn apart by whatever it is that's going on. And I think if there's an opportunity here for a son or a daughter to reach out to their dad just to, wish him a happy Father's Day and say, give them the opportunity to tell their story, I think you'd be amazed. We've had many, many veterans, of course, on Veterans Radio who after their interview, they talked to their children. They said, "Dad, I never knew anything about that. That explains so much." And I just encourage all of you veterans out there, if you haven't sat down with your children or your grandchildren, and just ask them if they have any questions as an opener, because I know you don't want to just sit down and say, "Okay, this is what I did in the war." But many times it's these stories that you have. This is what your legacy that you're passing down to the next generations.
Yeah, I think the healing it is so important, and the closure and the understanding. And I can't speak for Harold, because he was the one that brought me these letters.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there's a real closure for him to know that JP's story is shared and can be an example for others. There's a great healing there, and it's important. It's a great Father's Day story. Yes, it is. It's one that every Father's Day, you know, for the rest of my life, I'll be sharing with people, mm-hmm. particularly. And it's a beautiful story. You know, we live by the stories we tell. That's how culture shared, and that's how we learned. And I'm just so pleased that I was part of this story. It's a wonderful thing. You know, I just plead to everybody who's out there, just get this book, read it and share it.
Read it and share it and pass it along. And, you know, because you're going to be marking up this book. I've got all kinds of little highlights and folded pages and everything that I can think of in here that I wanted to talk about, but I don't want to give away the ending. And so I'm going to respect the author's case in this.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. But there's also a lot of different explanations in here about ships and their codes and what they do and so forth. And again, because I'm not in the Navy, or I wasn't in the Navy, I didn't know enough about this stuff. And I think it's important also for veterans themselves to read this book, because you're going to find out that whether you're in the Navy or the Marines or the Army or the Air Force, whatever, you have similar situations that you've gone through. And that the more that you become aware of these, the more that you're going to understand those other services, and you're going to respect them more. I found out on this program, I was a pilot, so I can't say, you know, physically I was above all much of the stuff, and I didn't know what those guys did in the ground until I started doing this program. And I have so much more respect than I did 40 years ago, just because I didn't understand. And I think this will help everybody understand.
Yeah, and you get an idea that it's not always the guy right at the very front line was the only one being scared and shot at.
Mm-hmm.
I got a real sense in doing these two books, because it's about the USS Fuller, is where this came from. You know, those guys that delivered the troops to the front edge of the battlefield and did it over and over. You know, they did it multiple times in harrowing service. And in the book, JP, you know, kind of apologizes, says, "Well, I wasn't really on a battleship or a mm-hmm. destroyer or a submarine or one of these things. I wasn't on a warship. I was just on a kind of like a glorified transport." Well, you know, he didn't explain that glorified transport was the target for the kamikazes, was the target for the submarines, you know, and was delivering the troops, you know. I love the whole sequence of HBO's The Pacific and what was done with
right.
the Marines. But every time I looked at that, my appreciation was, well, those guys got there somehow.
Somebody dropped them off, and somebody picks them up.
Yeah, and somebody went back there over and over and over. And when I learned and went through this appreciation process with my dad, when I you know, wrote the first mm-hmm. book about the Fuller, and it's all based on you know, his service there. You know, he did it 9 times. You know, 9 invasions. And you know, how many times do you go to battle? You know, some guys, well, they went to Iwo or they went to Okinawa, and they served mm-hmm. twice, E.B. Sledge did. He was on 2 islands, and what he went through was terrible. You know, and there's no way to replicate. You know, but these other guys went 9 times. You know, not as many days in a row, but you know, in different ways they served. You know,
I know. Well, we got.
I was shot at once in service by accident. It scared the death out of me.
You know? I can understand that. Dale, I'm sorry, we got to go. Dale Stacker, author of Sailor Man. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. We'll have you back on again with your new book, or maybe we'll go back and look at the history of the Fuller again.
Okay. Thank you much.
Thanks,
God
Dale.
Bless.
Thank you. God bless you, and happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
All right. Go out and get this book, folks. This is going to explain a lot. I think you're going to really enjoy it. I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I wish everybody a happy Father's Day. Go, if you've got kids around you, go and hug them. Let them know how much you care about them, because JP went a long time without his kids knowing how they felt. Bob Gould will be back next week. We're going to be talking with a group of veterans, kind of having a little roundtable discussion, and we got to go. I got 1 minute to go? All right. I got 1 minute. I want to encourage people to go to the Veterans Radio website. We're still collecting or attempting to collect donations to support Veterans Radio. We feel it's a worthwhile mission, and we want to know how you feel about it, so send us an email. If you'd like to participate on Veterans Radio, send me an email and let me know if you have some stories that you would love to hear on the air here on Veterans Radio. You can also go to Veterans Radio, listen to our podcasts, and we're in the process of building up the Veterans Radio internet radio station, so we're looking for programming. So send your emails to Dale at Veterans Radio, and until next week, you are dismissed.